Hey, I'm Ken Pettit.
And I'm Martin Fraser.
And we are Loud Americans Discussing Soccer, better known as Lads. Lads.
I forgot to make the fake noise and just drank.
Okay, I just want to let everybody know, we've only done this a few times where we actually haven't cracked and opened a beer, but we try to do, you know, the opening of the episode, and then we were having some technical difficulties, and we already cracked our beers. I know, I get it. We're phonies. We should have just cracked open another one and downed the ones we just have. But you know what? We're just, it's 7:42 here on the East Coast. We're trying to get an episode out to you guys. And you know what? We're both, me and Martin worked all day. I'm sorry. We're just going to try and get on with the episode. But hey, today is September 28th, 2021, from South Boston in Mooresville, North Carolina. Martin, what a weekend of soccer. Holy shit. There were some highs of highs, especially for me, some lows and lows, some for you, and, you know, a little in between there. But yeah, pretty solid weekend, and we're already six games into the Premier League season. Are we already, what, like a fifth of the way through the season? I know it's 38 games. What's the math? What's six out of 38?
That's a good question, Kevin. I'm glad that you brought that up.
I got a calculator.
I'm not going to answer that question because I cannot do math that quick, and it's gone. But yeah, we are
all right. Rapidly, we're 15%, 16%,
15%. Look at Kevin, big math man. We are rapidly approaching October, which is just in time for another international break. I believe after this upcoming weekend, we go back into the dog shit international break zone.
No.
So you know, get it while it's good, guys, because right now it's darn good. Like Kev said, six games in, and it genuinely feels like the season just started yesterday. And you know, the actual table is starting to take shape, and it's starting to pan out kind of the way the pundits thought it was. And like you said, highs of the highs and the lows of the lows this weekend. But I do want to start off by announcing my retirement from fantasy football. I am so goddamn done, Kevin. I played the wild card this weekend, and I thought I did really, really darn good. I got Ronaldo and Lukaku on my team. I got Pogba on my team. I got Luke Shaw. I got fucking Duffy. I got Emiliano Martinez. And I got 42 points. Literally, any player that I transfer into my squad, go check out my squad. Any player that I transfer in is going to do dog shit that weekend. So base your bets based on my awful fantasy management. Oh my God, I'm bad.
Yeah, the average is 43. I came in with a hot 29 this week. I don't know, like I look at the highest each week and it's so degrading. Like I feel like I'm being degraded when I see the highest points this week was 117 and I got 29. Like,
dude, it's awful. I'm already 150 points behind first place, and there's no way I'm catching that up. That's like four match weeks for me.
Yeah, I am 66 in the lads fantasy. I don't know how Kaja Warrior is still number ones, but you know what? We do this each week. We sometimes forget every other week. But hey, here are your leaders in the lads fantasy league. You have Kaja Warriors at number one. Wickham Wanderers moved up to number two. Griff Football Club in three. 40-year-old Virgil in fourth. Chicken Tikka Masala in fifth. Sorry, that one got me. that was clever. you are my Silkshar in six, not Gway away three. I'm stupid. Oh, it's Logan. Okay. He's in seventh. Arteto's Lego hair is eighth. Creation of Adama is ninth. And Ben in my white TFC is 10th. Ooh, that like rolled off the tongue really well.
I swear that's a song. I swear that's a damn song. And I'm too old to know what song it is and what the reference is. But I swear something in my white tee. Bum, bum, not, something like that.
Yeah. I think that same rhythm and everything. Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. but anyway, that was our fantasy leaders. And, just a little bit of news. We did our FIFA giveaway. So congrats to Yvonne09. He received himself a new copy of FIFA 22 for the PS4. So thanks to everyone who submitted into it. We had over 100 people comment and try to enter into the contest. So we plan on doing probably like one of these a month, maybe, I don't know, depends on how good my wallet looks, I guess. So, and how I'm feeling. Sometimes it's just spur of the moment, but yeah, if you hang out, we'll be giving away FIFA, some jerseys, some shirts each month. So yeah, stay tuned for all that. And make sure to follow us on our social media. So you can do that on Lads Instagram, at Lads Podcast, and Lads _ podcast on Twitter. So yeah, that's all I got for you guys in terms of plugs. So should we do some soccer news to kick it off before we do some match week 6 recap? Martin?
Yeah, I mean, we were with you guys this last, I mean, there was some obviously big news throughout the weekend and the Champions League games, but this is our news for stuff off the pitch. And Kev, we talked about this before the show. I think we would be remiss not to bring up the man, the myth, the surname. The motherfucker is an absolute legend.
So what Martin is referring to, we talked about this, I believe, on last week's show. So the vice president of Suriname, who owns the club, what is the club that he owns? Olympia?
No, but
oh, against Olympia.
I don't know, but go for it. He owns a club, and he's a player manager, coach, owner.
Yes, and he was found giving out cash to the rival players and staff in the visitors' changing room for allowing him to go. So both clubs have been disqualified for corruption for the next year from the CONCACAF League. So again, very CONCACAF.
Very, very CONCACAF. And I mean, that's what soccer is all about, dude. Some rich dude bribing his way onto a pitch and then beating the opposition by paying them off. I mean, shoot, that's truly what it is at the FIFA and UEFA level. So power to you, Surname.
Hey, if you're going to distribute money, don't do it on camera. There's a lesson that can be learned here.
Pro tip. Everybody,
if you do something illegal,
don't do deals on camera.
If you do something illegal, don't get caught. See, I think there's a valuable lesson to be learned here. Other soccer news. The Maldini news. Maldini, Daniel Maldini, who I believe is the son of Paolo Maldini, scored for AC Milan this weekend. So now he is the third Maldini to score for AC Milan. So kind of cool. And his dad was in the stands cheering him on. Kind of weird to think that, like, you got, I mean, Martin, you remember watching Maldini because you watched soccer so much younger than I did. It's crazy to think that his son is now scoring for, you know, probably your favorite Serie A club.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those holy shit, I'm old moments when I see a player that I idolize, you know, I have a kid and his kid is now playing soccer. I do think that, you know, this is one of those stories that is, it's kind of the beautiful fucking side of football. I mean, three generations, a grandfather, a father, and a son, each who have pledged their playing careers to AC Milan. And you know, Paolo Maldini is an absolute legend, as well as Cesar Maldini. And, you know, if Daniel Maldini can reach half the heights his father did, he'll be crowned a legend as well. So it's just one of those things where it doesn't matter who you represent, who you root for. It's just a cool aside. It's a cool story. It's amazing that the love of this game has translated so well across generational gaps. And I mean, shoot, can you imagine being in the Maldini household and not playing anything other than soccer? Like, imagine if the dude wanted to play basketball. I'm pretty sure Maldini would have slide tackled him until he said yes to soccer.
You just, and it is very, I feel like it's more rare, than say other sports to see like a sibling or a relative be also professional in the same sport. I mean, if I were thinking soccer, I mean, probably I think of Zidane, Simeone, their sons are both playing. Who else? I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Brothers, we can talk about Ayew's, Jordan, and the other one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Torres.
Hazard, Thorgan, and Eden. You can, you know, choose for yourself which one is better. But it's
Colo, Yaya, yeah,
yeah,
good ones.
And then you know, the players that I truly loved growing up are now having kids. That like Cristiano Ronaldo's kid is in Manchester United training academy. Kai Rooney, Rooney's kid is in the Manchester United academy. So it's going to be crazy in about 15 years from now if we see the legends that I truly remember growing up. And their kids are playing and starting for these teams that we all fucking love. So it's just one of those beautiful stories in football. And, you know, it allows you to take a step back and you know, kind of reflect on how great of a sport and how involved football is in these communities abroad.
Yeah, no, it's kind of sick. I love seeing a legacy continued. You know, I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing young Rooney, young Ronaldo team up top for Manchester United one day. That would be kind of cool. So
that'd be ridiculous. That'd be insane.
Yeah, you'd be telling your kids, I remember when their dads were playing in the yeah, league. Yeah,
right.
Okay. I don't really have too much soccer news. We probably might touch on a little Champions League stuff that happened today with Man City, PSG, and, you know, the huge upset of Sheriff, against Real Madrid. But yeah, I'm down to hop into the match week six recap. Do you want to start with kind of the match of the weekend and the early 7:30 game, which I have no idea. The scheduling this year has sucked, by the way. Like, I don't know who thought it was a good idea to have the biggest match of the weekend kick off as the early game on Saturday. But yeah, Man City versus Chelsea. We both had Chelsea going into this match because Tuchel has kind of been in Pep's head and had his number. But I do feel as though the 1-0 result seems kind of, in hindsight, we should have seen that. I feel as though Man City had a lot more on the line with this game, not in terms of the Premier League title, but in terms of, you know, trying to prove something that, you know, Chelsea doesn't have this like stranglehold on them.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. But I mean, when you're looking at this game, and let's be very clear, Manchester City deserved to win this game through and through. But I think that the majority of the fault lies in Chelsea's hands. I think that this was the worst game that Chelsea has played tactically since Thomas Tuchel has taken over. I do not understand the formation that Thomas Tuchel chose, nor the tactics that he chose to employ on the pitch. And Manchester City took advantage of that. Manchester City is one of the best players or best teams at breaking down a low block. They are great at finding ways through a very low press. And that's what they did brilliantly almost the entire match. And let's be clear, if it wasn't for Edouard Mendy, this could have easily been a 4 or 5-0 game. So I do think Manchester City deserved to win this game. Like I said, I do think that they looked quite good out on the pitch throughout the entire game, specifically a couple individuals. Jackie Grealish looked great. I mean, if Gabriel Jesus was an actual good footballer, he could have had a hat trick. Foden looked great.
I mean, Ruben he Diaz did get the did goal. It was a deflected goal, but you know, he still got the, you know, man of the match.
He got a goal. Somehow, some way, they did not strip that
proved
goal.
Proved us haters wrong. He proved the haters
Gabriel
wrong.
Gabriel Jesus, he saves, baby. But like I said, I think the fault in this game from the first minute to the loss lays directly in the hands of Thomas Tuchel. If we're using metaphors, I'm going to jump on this metaphor train and say that Thomas Tuchel pulled a Pep.
Choo-choo. Okay, sorry.
He pulled a Pep, man. He pulled a Pep. He overthought this shit. And I thought it was exceedingly obvious when he pulled Conte off of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I mean, you just don't do that shit. I don't care how brilliant you are as a manager. You don't pull one of the best center defensive midfielders off to play Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who
that was Jorginho,
Chelsea player.
He did switch Conte for Kai Havertz, but yes, the late move was Jorginho. But that was also like a head scratcher. Like, what are we doing here? Are you like, you're down 1-0 and you're bringing off a defensive man? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it certainly didn't make any sense to me. And like I said, and I don't know if Chelsea fans will agree with me or not on this, but I do think this was the worst game that Chelsea has played under Thomas Tuchel. But it always goes back to the same points. Every time we get hype about these big matches, it's always a 1-0 fucking victory for one of the teams. And this was no different. I mean, Thomas Tuchel played it safe, too safe, and Pep Guardiola exploited it. And, you know, if this was in the Champions League or an FA Cup final, I mean, Pep might have done some crazy shit and put Kyle Walker in goal or some shit. But Pep played the game right. Thomas Tuchel missed the mark on this one for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was so timid. I mean, it was a big parked the bus, and it was just relying on if you know, they could catch them on the break, like absorb Man City's pressure for as long as possible, and then hope Timo Werner scores a goal. And it's like, well, he doesn't exactly do that often when he's in front of goal. So I don't know. We were texting about this, Martin. I'm just like, I want to be on Timo Werner's side so much, but he makes it so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, I think he is a great winger. I think he's great at crossing the ball. I think he's great at making some runs in behind the opposition. He had a couple of those runs in the City Chelsea game. But you put that man in front of the goal, and it's like he turns into me, because I can't hit the fucking bricks out of a barn at my age now. And Timo Werner cannot either. I said in a text, like, if you make the goals 4 feet wider and 4 feet taller, Timo Werner is going to be a problem. But the man can only shoot into the side netting. I don't get it. I don't know if he doesn't have, a realization as to where he is in terms of where the goal is. But the man is not a great finisher. I thought Ruben Diaz, who I'm not a huge fan of, I think he's overrated, but I thought he did a brilliant job of pocketing Lukaku the entire 90 minutes. And that is no easy feat at all.
Yeah, Man City's defense is unreal. I saw some stat today, and I think they're expected to face like less than one shot on target a game or something, Martin. Something absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Chelsea had zero shots on target this match. I mean,
yeah, that's again, crazy, dude. That's crazy and for me.
When you have Lukaku, Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, you have big names. These guys are, you know, Serie A winners, Champions League winners, which I know all the Chelsea fans are like, we still won the Champions League after. I mean, they just have that in their pocket and they can use it. I mean, they are the European champions, but come on, guys. Like, you can't. I mean, I guess you can. I don't know. I'm, as an Arsenal fan, what am I to say? I've never been a European champion, so who am I to say what you can and can't say? But I don't know, man. I just felt as though Thomas Tuchel just played it a little too safe in that regard. Like, if you would have scraped away a point out of that, I think you could have been happy with this. But I feel like, you know, it just felt as though Man City, if these two teams currently played each other like 10 times, I feel like Man City wins like 7 out of those 10. It kind of felt like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I do think that this Chelsea squad is not nearly as good as everybody thinks that they are. Yes, they won the Champions League. No doubt about that. Yeah, you guys are European champions. But if you look back, what was it, 2 weeks ago when they played Liverpool, the second they lost that man, they went into a complete turtle show and were seriously lucky to pull a draw out of the hat there. I think that Chelsea has been able to, you know, bring the punishment to smaller teams, which is what Thomas Tuchel excels at. When the cards are in his favor, he'll go balls to the wall against these smaller teams and just smash them, grab them. But I do think that Chelsea is going to go into a touch of a tailspin here. I'm not saying it's going to be a slide. I'm not saying Chelsea is bad. So all you Chelsea fans, relax. You guys are, you know,
no, I mean, you guys are still team. You're definitely still title contenders, but after, I mean, we're just giving you our reaction after that match. And it just felt like Man City were not leaps and bounds, but, you know, the much better side. And when we're coming down to what we believe to be a very close title race, these one or two points dropped here, you can look back and be like, ah, we could have gotten a draw there. You know, we just tried a little more, you know? So I don't know. Like you said, Martin, we can start by the end of September. Now we're moving in October. Like, the first couple matches of the season were kind of like, okay, everything can be kind of crazy. But like, once we started getting into October, we can start making like, what is the actual narrative of this squad this year? So,
yeah,
we'll see. I still think Chelsea are very good. I still think they could definitely win the title. But like, you know, and I think Tuchel is a brilliant manager. I think he's one of the top managers, not only in the Premier League, in the world. I just, you know, this seemed like a bit of a red flag a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, Pep Guardiola played this game perfectly. His players executed the game plan perfectly. So I don't think that there are any complaints in Manchester City's dressing room after this. And the scary thing about Manchester City is, going forward, you just know that they're, if history is, you know, anything to judge a cover on, they're just going to get more competitive and more consistent. So these early fights, these early matches between big heads like Chelsea, Manchester City, obviously United plays Manchester City on November 6th, which is, I think, 2 weeks after we return from the international break. I mean, these are, like you said, the points that could determine the title race. So it is imperative for, you know, Chelsea fans to take those points, whether it's a draw, whether it's a win against a perennial winner like Manchester City. So I definitely think it was a missed opportunity for Chelsea from the get-go. Like I said, I don't think Thomas Tuchel employed the right tactics or the right formation or the right players to deal with this Manchester City squad, and they were punished for it, and deservedly punished for it. So, you know, all in all, I think this was a fair result. It could have easily been 3-4-5 to zero. Like you said, I mean, one shot on target is it's a bit fucking insane when you have Romelu Lukaku up front and you have the European champion squad that you had last year. It's a touch crazy for me, man.
Zero shots on target, Martin. Zero.
As I was.
And they had five. No, but even crazier, but only five shots in total. So,
I mean, that's Manchester United numbers, dog.
Yeah.
You can't be doing that.
I mean, if you're a Chelsea fan, I will give you the benefit of the doubt and say, like, they only won on a deflected Gabriel Jesus goal. You can be like, oh, well, come on, guys. Like, but if watching the entire match, like, I don't think the scoreline really reflects how good Man City were in this game. So, okay. Well, I feel good on that match. Also, a little fun thing, Martin. The only two people who have scored against Chelsea are Jesus and Muhammad. So God is against Chelsea.
That's fair. I mean, their owner is Roman Abramovich.
So God fair enough.
Russians.
Yeah, I think. Is that true?
I don't know. Fuck, I'm atheist. Shit.
fair. Okay. I just wanted to, you know, check on that. All right. Well, this will make you not believe in God. Manchester United 0, Aston Villa 1. Unreal goal in the 88th minute. Stunning goal from a corner by Courtney House. Yeah. Martin, what you go first, because, you know, I'm not going to beat you up. Because you were very nice to me the first three games of the season.
I tried. I know what kind of team my team is. And this is it, Kev. Like, this is the Manchester United of the past. This is the Manchester United team that keeps raising its ugly head. And this is the Manchester United team that we apparently cannot overcome. And I vividly, vividly, vividly remember saying in our podcast on Thursday, if Scott McTominay and Fred start this game, if McFred start this game, we are going to lose this game.
And what happened?
Lo and behold, we lost this game. But that is not the problem for me. I have no problem losing a game. This is the thing. As a 28-year-old Manchester United fan who has seen the highest of highs of this team and the lowest of lows of this team, I don't have a problem losing the game. It is the energy. It is the motivation. It is the tactical expertise. It is the formation that is shown on the pitch that is so goddamn concerning to me. Because you watched this game, and it was dog shit. I'll say the same thing about Villa as I said about City. Villa deserved to win this game through and through. There was a laziness. There was a complete lack of creativity in the midfield, which I have been saying for the past 3 years. The ball never or rarely got to Ronaldo's feet. So why are we going to buy the GOAT if you can't even give him service? Why is Manchester United playing two defense-minded center mids against lower-level teams? And yeah, Aston Villa, damn good team. Damn good coach. Damn good individuals. No doubt about it. But this
is
Manchester United we're talking about.
I definitely felt as though Aston Villa, not to interrupt, fought enough to at least get 1 point. The fact that they came away with three is like, ugh.
And like I said, Kev, I mean, they deserve three out of this. Through 88 minutes, they were the better team. Through 92 minutes, they were the better team. They deserve this win because we were lazy on that field. We did not have the creativity. We did not have the ability to break down the the low block that all these lower, quote unquote, lower level teams employ against the top six. And Solskjaer's United just cannot break it down. They do not have the creativity to break down that low block, to get balls into the box. And he says, quote, we are not the team that sprays in crosses trying to break down these teams. Why the fuck not? Whatever you are doing is not working. Start spraying in crosses. You have Pogba, who's a beast of a human. You have Ronaldo, who's an absolute god of a human. You have Greenwood, who's up and coming. You have Cavani that's coming back from injury. You have Rashford, who's going to come back from injury. And you don't even start Jadon Sancho. Why the fuck did we buy him, Ben? Huh? 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 Ollie? Huh?
I've never really rated Ollie, as I've said on this show. But if we look at the last four fixtures, even outside the Premier League, you lose the Young Boys. You get knocked out of the League Cup, which, again, Carabao Cup doesn't really matter. And you squeak by thanks to a bonehead move by David Moyes to put in Mark Noble to take a penalty. And then this loss here. So that's, what, three losses and one win in the past four matches. I mean, is Ollie the guy? I just don't think he is. And when you look at this Man United squad, I think this is the best Man United squad you guys have had in over a decade. I just feel as though, like, is he up to the task, or you should be thinking about bringing somebody else in at this moment to really start contending for Champions League? Because I think this is a Champions League caliber squad and a Premier League caliber squad, and it's up to the manager to get them ready for these games, especially at Old Trafford. His Old Trafford, record is not good. It's fucking Old Trafford. That's holy land to United fans and the Red Devils, you know? So I get his away record's really good for some odd reason, but I feel as though, is it better to be good at home or away? It's just good to win. I get that, but this is Old Trafford, man. So I don't know. I don't think Ollie's the guy. And I know he's been great for this rebuild. I think he's been great for the squad. Everybody loves him. He's a great team. Like, he's a good locker room guy, but I think to get to that next level with the guys you've had, I mean, I know we always shit on the Glazers and ownership and stuff like that, but you can't deny that they put together a really good squad right now.
Yeah, I think that some clarification has to be made in the Glazers' perspective. This squad has been built by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This squad has not been built by
the Glazers. All credit.
This squad has not been built by Woodward. This squad has been built by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I think that one thing he does very well, and the reason that he is still manager for Manchester United, is because he is a phenomenal man manager, an ego manager. Kev, we've been friends for fucking 10 years or some shit. I have always backed Ollie. I have been steadfast in my defense of Ollie retaining his job. But I think football has progressed to a point where you don't need a tactician on the field as much as you used to. And Tim Sherwood made an idiotic point, but he raised a decent fucking viewpoint. Tim Sherwood, if you don't know, was an absolute failed player, a failed manager, and now he's in punditry. Fucking go figure. Cristiano Ronaldo Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be managing this team in 18 months, and that's not going to happen. But I very much believe that Manchester United needs that style of manager, just like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is. I don't believe that they need a tactician like Pep Guardiola. I don't believe that they need a ex-player like Ronaldo. I don't believe that they need any of that shit. I think Ollie is the right man for the job, but he has to fucking do his homework. He has to take risks. And this Manchester United team, for whatever reason, when Manchester United is playing a mid-table to lower table squad, we just get stuck in this low block. We cannot break them down, and we refuse to take risks. And, you know, one goal can change the whole fucking shape of the game. And these teams can get that goal against us because, let's be honest, our defense is still not good. I will say this once more for the people in the back. Maguire is the problem. Lindelof was never the problem. Maguire is dog shit. play Lindelof and Vaughn for the love of God. But
yeah, to sum his up the passing's game for me, bad. Kev, he's bad at bringing up the ball. Sorry, no, I'm just on Maguire. Like, I get upset at him because I do think he's decent, like pretty good
he's
defensively.
Good. He's average, yes.
But like when he brings up the ball, he's pretty good. But his passes just seem weighted poorly. You know what I mean? It just feels like sometimes he puts a little too much zhuzh on it sometimes, and could just be a little lighter. I don't know. I don't like it when I see him with the ball and bringing it up sometimes. I don't know. Cause I just feel like he's bringing it up well, and then just to finish, the final product is just not there. And I know that's not his job, but you know, we live in the new age of football where defense.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Right.
But we haven't even talked about, obviously the biggest talking point of the game, besides the last minute goal, is the penalty.
All right. I have no problem with him missing. Absolutely no problem. You miss penalties from time to time. What I can't fucking stand is the reactionary idiots who say, yeah, Ronaldo should have taken the penalties. Bruno has literally missed two penalties he's ever taken for us in the past 3 years. Two.
Right.
It doesn't matter how good Cristiano Ronaldo is. He's got
but,
the fucking
But it
job.
Does matter. Come on.
Nah,
it does.
No.
Emi Martinez turning into a shit talker. You saw all this.
All right. Yeah. Enjoy your next ninth place finish, Emi Martinez, you fucking idiot.
Dude, he's living the dream right now. Emi Martinez, Arsenal, like backup, and now all-star goalkeeper in the Premier League, winning trophies with Messi. Like, I don't know, man. Emi Martinez, talk that shit, man. He's going to have a very short window to being this good. So
that's fair. I do love Emi. I can't lie. You know, and you know me, I've always been a fan of
talk your shit to him. I mean, obviously he's talking shit to your team, so good. But after this week, you can be like, all right, we're cool again.
Yeah, for real. Like, I'm hurt right now, Emi, but I'll be back on your fucking camp next week.
Dude, pointing. He got into Bruno's head. You saw this. He's like pointing, like, no, he should take it. Ronaldo should take it. Come on, Bruno. You shouldn't take it. Dude, the man is a class A fucking troll, man. I like Emi a lot. I'm so upset that Arsenal let him go.
I am too, but let's be honest. Is Ramsdale? I'm sorry. We'll wait for the Arsenal stuff until Arsenal. I have no problem with Bruno missing the goddamn pen. It happens in soccer. I mean, Manchester City went through their entire squad, and I still don't think they have a standard penalty taker. So I got no problem.
Was Mahrez's
second penalty?
Remember that? Remember that penalty by Mahrez? He sent it up into the moon.
Yeah,
was it in the Champions League? Oh yeah.
People fucking miss. I just think that everybody is reactionary as shit, and like, yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo is the GOAT. He's the best ever to fucking play the game, but Bruno is the future of this club. Bruno has literally done more for this club in the past 3 years than Cristiano Ronaldo has. And that's just a fact. Bruno is the reason that Manchester United is competitive again. Put Bruno back on that penalty spot next penalty. If you don't, I think that's a darn shame.
Well, I mean, it's tough when Ronaldo's only been there for like a week, and Bruno, you know, I mean, your statement is very much true. It's just, it's hard when, you know, Ronaldo is such a Manchester United legend, and I don't know. I get your point. I think it was overblown by the media. I'm just here to make some jokes because it's Bruno and penalties. I mean, it's easy material for everyone on the internet. So
it was his first penalty of the season. So to be fair, he is a little rusty. He's used to get what, like five a game, if you believe Instagram.
Dude, Jurgen Klopp has ruined it for you. Jurgen Klopp said one thing in your penalties.
God, I fucking hate Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for saying that shit.
Dude,
so petty.
But I saw the stat. It was, you guys were getting a penalty every 2.2 games, and now you're getting a penalty after Jurgen Klopp's statement every 5.8. So, just saying.
We also had the fifth most penalties all of last year. So, the whole narrative around Manchester United
getting
penalties is false.
Anyway, that's enough on that match. No trouble in paradise, right, Martin? No Bruno Ronaldo.
A lot of trouble, but we're brushing it aside. We're pretending it doesn't exist. Stomach that shit, Dewey. We are men.
Okay. I'll just hop around a little bit. I watched the West Ham Leeds game with my good buddy Brian at the Banshee Bar. This is where I watched all the Saturday games. Got a bit drunk, had some Guinness and some lovely breakfast pizza. Delicious. All I have about this game was Mikel Antonio. Is he a good striker? Yes. I'll say yes.
Up until the point he is not, and that time is a coming.
Yes. Beginning of the season, he's been on fire. He's one of West Ham's most key players when he is like that. Got the 90th minute goal. He has been very clutch for them this season. When that runs out, I will be very sad for West Ham fans because they really don't have any other offensive weapons besides him. And like obviously Benrahma and stuff like that. But once Mikel Antonio, like who are they going to put up front if he's not available? So, and Leeds lost again. So nice. Biesla just it's our predictions have been very wrong on Leeds so far this season.
Yeah, they have. And I mean, you know, everybody's found out eventually. And I do think hard work trumps talent. 9 times out of 10, but in the Prem where hard work is just about neck and neck with talent, it wears on, and it wears down. But I do believe Leeds are talent too, because let's be honest with ourselves. It's going to be the exact same in match week 30, in match week 36, and match week 38. So while other teams start getting fatigued, run down, Leeds is still going to be just pumping up the field. Like, God damn it, Biesla, why you do this to me?
Again, like, I'm tired of this shit, Dewey. I'm tired of this, Grandpa. That's too damn bad, Sean Dyche says. Biesla. I just have Sean Dyche on the mind because I'm just looking at the Leicester-Burnley game. I wanted, as much as I love Leicester, I love Jamie Vardy and that whole squad. I was rooting for Burnley in this match, man. They were winning. They were leading. And then Jamie fucking Vardy once again. I should have known he wanted to ruin my Burnley wet dream.
I mean, Jamie Vardy ages like cocaine in a night. He just gets better and better and better. Like, that dude is untouchable, dog. I love Jamie Vardy. He might be my favorite player right now. And has been for the Kevin, you there, bud?
Okay, yeah, you keep breaking up a little bit, and you like slow down and speed up a little bit. But I think,
God damn,
no, I think we're good. We're just gonna keep going. But yes, I did hear your whole Jamie Vardy bit about what's it called, being your current favorite player and your cocaine analogy, which I did enjoy. but yeah, I mean, tough. I mean, both these squads kind of lose. Like Leicester are sitting in 12th. Burnley are currently on 19th place. So both are not where expectations should be for either of these clubs 6 weeks in.
No, and I mean, I think that, you know, as this season starts to really take shape and, you know, the front runners are out front, the back markers are in the back, I think that the rest of the midfield are going to shuffle around. But, I mean, I got to have faith in what Brendan Rodgers has done for this club. But Jamie Vardy, the talent of Kelechi Iheanacho, there is so much talent on this Leicester squad. So I don't see this as a worrying game for me. But, shit, man, not a great start for the Foxes.
No, neither side. So I want Leicester at least, like, hopefully in the top 10, if not top 6, and I want Burnley not relegated. So please, both of you, get your shit together. Next match I'll do is Liverpool-Brentford. And Brentford, again, these feisty fucking bees, these buzzing bees, they can't be stopped, Martin.
Dude, I swear there's one championship team that comes out of the championship every single year into the Prem, who nobody's ready for, nobody's expecting, and this year it's the Brentford Bees.
They're
and
the Sheffield United, yeah.
They are, and I'm so fucking about it. They're taking their team to every top six squad and just either beating them or drawing them. They're impressive as all hell. And, you know, I say this about Leicester City all the time, but Brentford doesn't change their game. They went balls to the wall, and let's be clear, I think Brentford could have been 2 goals up by the 20th minute if Liverpool didn't have some fantastic goal line clearances. So all the credit to Brentford for keeping this up. Obviously, between Mohamed Salah and Diogo Jota, you're guaranteed at least 2 goals game. So it's, I think this is more of a loss for Liverpool than it is a win. Well, no, I take that back. I think it is equally a loss for Liverpool and a win for Brentford. An insane game. 3-3. Never guessed that.
Liverpool's defense is bad now that Virgil van Dijk
is back. Alexander is back in defense, man. Typical.
I thought Virgil was the greatest center. No, I'm just kidding. I won't do this. I know you would do this. you would troll Liverpool fans.
Greatest team in Premier League history. Drawing the bees. Yep,
there it is. I was waiting for that.
The streets don't forget, Kevin.
Ballers don't forget. Real ones remember. man. The rest of the Saturday games. But yeah, Liverpool, even with the point, sitting at the top of the Premier League with 14 points. So, I mean, it's all very close right now. But hey, it's nice, you know, sitting at the top. And also, Mohamed Salah reached his 100th goal in the Premier League. So congrats, Mohamed Salah. Not a one-season wonder.
Weird. My two most hated professional sports players, Mohamed Salah and Lewis Hamilton, each reached their 100 mark this weekend. Lewis got 100 wins in an absolutely rain-soaked last
'cause they hate you.
Dude, you got to watch the highlights of this race. It was insane. Rain came in the last five laps. Lando Norris chose not to pit. Lewis Hamilton listened to his engineers and pit. Lando Norris just could not drive in the rain on slicks, and Lewis passed him. But Max went from 20th to P2. But anyway, like I was saying, Lewis Hamilton got his 100th win, which has never been done. And that's literally only because he essentially has played for 2014 Barcelona his entire career. And Mohamed Salah gets his 100th Premier League goal. So fucking kudos to the people I hate.
Yeah. Can you hate Arsenal more? And so they can win stuff. That would be
that's
cool.
The problem. I don't hate Arsenal.
Fuck.
That's it, right,
Martin.
There.
Fuck you, Martin. Fuck you. Yeah, Arsenal
fuck
hates
you
your guts.
Hating my team.
Okay. The rest of the Saturday games, I could give a flying fuck about. Watford, Newcastle. Who cares? Sean Longstaff. Shout out to a ginger. He got a ginger goal. And Everton, 2-0 to Norwich. All I got to take away from this is Norwich is still very bad. They're just really, really so bad. They are the baddest team, worst bad team in the Premier League. And Everton just sneakily getting some cheeky wins here and there. Hey, watch out. I'm just saying, don't sleep on Rafa, man. I love Rafa.
Rafa.
Okay. Let's get into the game that probably a lot of people want to tune in for, and that's the North London Derby, Martin.
Bruh. Hey, Kev, I want to hear it fucking live and raw. Tell me
okay.
about it, Kevin.
Oh, it was raw, Martin. Oh, that shit was raw on Sunday. Just a little going into this game. Both these squads aren't really playing for a lot this season, let's be real. And this was a dignity game, Martin. This was a big, you know, we might suck. We're definitely not the best team in London. We're not going to win the Premier League. We're probably not going to come away with any silverware. But God damn it, we can be the best team in North London. This was a big, you know, that was at stake in this. And going into this, Arsenal, two games in a row, getting the momentum, Tottenham, two straight losses, really bad losses as well. But it's a derby. It can go either way, even if it's Everton, Liverpool, or, you know, whoever the squads might be, Man City, Manchester United, when, you know, Manchester United might not be in form a few years ago, they can still give it to Man City. This was an absolute shit pumping, Martin, and it felt so good to be a gooner. I'm so sorry, Spurs fans, but God damn it, I fucking love the North London Derby. I mean, Aubameyang doing the fucking Thierry Henry celebration while he was there in the retro jersey up in the stands. Just tears in my eyes, Martin. Just straight tears. ESR with a beautiful goal, his first goal, and Saka, the two star boys, also on the score sheet. It was 3-0 in the 34th minute. I couldn't have asked for a better start to this game, and it was just straight just Arsenal domination, and North London is in fact red again. The scoreline ended 3-1. Son got a late goal. Almost could have been 3-2, but I think the game was over within the first 30 minutes, and it's crazy to think how the beginning of the season started, and now Tottenham were top of the table, three games in, we are at the bottom, and now those roles have reversed, and we are in 10th place. So feels fucking good, Martin. Okay, I'm done. I'll talk more about the match after you go, but that's my initial just, wow, good feeling.
Hell yeah, brother. I think that we said it best in our Thursday show last week. This is one of those matches where it doesn't matter what position you are in. This is bragging rights. This is for honor. And Arsenal came out with blood foaming in their mouths, and it showed. It showed in the first 30 minutes when they went 3-0 up. It showed in the entire second half when they held the line. Arsenal was the better team and deserved that victory through and through. And Kev, I got some rapid fire questions for you. First and foremost, is Ramsdale your starting goalie?
Maybe. Everyone talked mad shit about Ramsdale, even me. And goddamn, he proved me wrong. He was phenomenal in this game. Easily without him, it could have been 3-2, if not even maybe a draw. I tend not to think about those things because that makes me sad in those weird hypotheticals. But no, like Ramsdale, real deal. Real deal Ramsdale. That's my nickname for him. We'll make some shirts. Real deal Ramsdale. Yeah, has a real off the tongue, you know. So, yeah, any more questions? I like Ramsdale a lot.
Yeah, all right. Second question. Harry Kane who?
Bro, we talk so much about how Arsenal did so well in this match. Aubameyang finding his fucking, you know, flair. And it just felt like the team was just running so smoothly out there. It felt like good old Arsenal again, at least for a moment. I can just hold and cherish this moment for a second. Like it's, what would it be like? Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless.
First time.
Yeah, I was going to say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Like, you're going to hate me. It's like, well, we can just enjoy this for a moment here in Montauk. But, yeah, let's talk about Spurs. This is kind of what we thought they would be, right? Like, the first three games of the season, maybe a little fluky. They came back a little motivation. But this team does not seem motivated. Nuno is the new Jose Mourinho. And it just feels as though, like, this team does not give a fuck.
Well, yeah, and I do think that while Nuno Santos is obviously to blame for some of their issues, I think this squad as a whole has either given up on Nuno Santos or this is the reason Jose Mourinho was so pissed off and got himself fired or retired, whatever you want to fucking hear. Because if you look at their stats, the Spurs have the 20th ranked yards covered per game. They have the 19th ranked possession per game. They have the 20th ranked shots per game. They have the 20th ranked shots allowed per game. And so, I mean, I don't care what manager is at the helm. For goddamn sakes, they had Ryan Mason for the last, like, 10 games last season, and they still look better than this. I think this comes down to the individuals on the fucking pitch not putting forth this effort, specifically Harry Kane. And, you know, I said that Harry Kane was not going to play football this year. I thought he was going to ride the fucking bench, ride the locker room all season. And he might as well be doing that because he is worthless out there. Rapid fire question number three, Kevin. Does Heung-Min Son leave to improve his career and credentials? Because he is the best player on that Spurs team right now.
No, I think he's just so beloved. And he's also such an asset because South Korea fucking loves Tottenham because of Heung-Min Son, and he brings in so much revenue. So I think they might try and hold on to him for one of those reasons as well. But I think this is a tale of Tottenham thinking like they are bigger than they are. And I know this sounds shitty. They got this massive stadium that they're still trying to pay off. They have like a quick window of Pochettino, and they had great success under Pochettino, even though it didn't lead to any silverware. Those two seasons where they technically had more points than anybody else, but somehow didn't win the Premier League. Remember that?
Yep.
And I just felt as though Dan Levy maybe thought like, oh yeah, we're at that level now of these other clubs, and they weren't. And now it's a very much like when Arsenal got the Emirates, but I think Arsenal had a little bit more prestige than Spurs.
Agreed. Absolutely. But I mean, like you said, this is Spurs reaching for something that they never had. Arsenal had that shit and lost it. Spurs never had that shit.
Right. And I just feel like Spurs historically, I mean, the past like 5 or 6 years, we've known them as like a top four team, obviously under Pochettino, but like Spurs historically have always been in that kind of like eighth to sixth spot, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They have this giant stadium. They're hosting boxing fights to try and pay off the fucking, oof. You know, the wage. I don't know, man. It just feels as though this is I think things can get really ugly for Spurs. I feel as though no one gives a fuck about Nuno going back to, he was like the 10th manager selected. Harry Kane doesn't even want to be there. You know, like, who's going to listen to Harry Kane? Like, dude, you don't even want to be here. Imagine the other, like, him telling you to do something as your captain. It's like,
yeah, and
I don't give a fuck. Like, you still want to leave. You don't want to be here.
Yeah, and I think that his antics and behavior this summer were and are more damaging to the club than the managership merry-go-round or the lack of motivation throughout the club itself, at least on the pitch. Obviously, I'm not a Tottenham fan, so I don't see what happens behind the scenes. I'm not privy to all that shit, nor do I honestly give a fuck about that shit. It's crazy to me to see the absolute declination of Spurs football club since Pochettino wrestled this club to a Champions League final, which still to this day was the worst final I've ever seen in my life. But I got one more rapid fire question for you, Kev. Who is a better manager when their position is under threat? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Mikel Arteta?
They trade punches, man. They really, like, when their job is on the line, they turn into prime Fergie. I really don't understand it. Like, and in defense, the first three games of the season were not great for Arsenal. And I even said, like, okay, let's see where we are come end of September. And three straight wins, we're at 9 points. We're at 10th place. We have doubled where we were from 20th place. And I got to say, like, okay, like, this is more of where I thought Arsenal was going to be. So I don't know, man. I really think it's so weird that Ole and Arteta, just whenever their job is on the line, it's just like, okay, all systems go. It's like, just do that. Just
bullshit.
Just do it all the time.
Please, God. Do you know what emotional hardship we're going through? Just be good all the time. Fuck.
Right. I don't understand it, but, yeah, and Arsenal have a few good games coming up against, you know, a team higher than them, Brighton, which we'll get to. But I have nothing more about the North London Derby, though. Awesome win for Arsenal. Tottenham, I people are like, shut up, Kevin. You're not really sorry. I'm like, I am, dude. Like, we're kind of in a similar position, so it's I can feel empathetic. We're also neighbors, so it's fine.
That is empathy that I do not possess, nor do I ever want to possess for my neighbors. Or the ones 30 minutes down the road in Liverpool. They can all suck a dick and die for all life.
Fair enough.
I don't care.
That's why we're different people.
You're a gooder man than me, Kevin.
A much gooder man. Wolves versus Southampton. Nothing to say here besides Raul Jimenez. Hey, welcome back. That was
a great
feel-good story. Him getting a goal. And can I say something? I don't think I've seen Southampton play this year. Like, I definitely seen the highlights, but I don't think I've sat down and watched them play another team.
I've seen them play, I believe, once, and
are they good?
I think it was just because I don't think they're good. Football game on. I think they're going to be in the Prem next year. I mean, shit, they're essentially becoming stalwarts in the Prem. They're good enough to stay in the Prem, not bad enough to fall down to the Championship. I think that they've found a 5-year manager in Ralph Hasenhoff. And you know, they lost their star player Danny Ings this past summer. They still held on to James Ward-Prowse, but they also lost Vestergaard this summer to Leicester City. So I mean, it's impressive that they're sticking out every single
lots
game.
Of draws.
They get points when they need points, and
they drew,
I think,
City.
That they're going to continue to do that.
Yeah, so I did watch a bit of the City draw. So I guess I did watch them. It just feels like they're just one team that's going to be under my radar this entire season. Like, oh yeah, Southampton's in the league.
Yeah, and they'll finish like 13 points or 13. Good God, I'm drinking Steel Reserve Tropical Thunder, which is 11%. So my fucking words.
Jesus Christ, I'm just drinking Bud Light tonight, dog. It's been a Bud Light night.
Bro, this is 2 for $2.50 at the Circle K, and I just can't pass up this deal.
Dude.
I mean, the economy's in shambles. I have to do my part to help out.
Bro, I would kill for cheap anything living in Boston. It's like fucking Manhattan here, dog. It's fucking bullshit. I can't.
Dude, I don't know if I told you this. You know the cigarettes that I smoke. Yes, I smoke cigarettes. Yes, I'm a piece of shit. Stop. My mom already told me that. But the cigarettes I smoke are Camel Crush menthols. I've smoked the same cigarettes for the past fucking, I don't know, I don't feel comfortable admitting how long I've smoked cigarettes. But they, when I first started buying them, they were like $5, 20 cents a pack. They are now $9 a pack. And I'm about to fucking quit because I'm not paying Philly prices again in my life.
That was one of the reasons
I moved back to North Carolina. I'm not paying $10 for a fucking pack of cigarettes.
Dog, Boston is like $12, man. It's crazy. And they don't even sell menthol here. It's banned.
All day long.
Menthol is banned here. So you can't even get those.
I'd roll my own. Fuck that shit. Actually, I would not roll my own because I'm too lazy for that shit. But still, stop trying to make us quit cigarettes by increasing the taxes on cigarettes because we're just
freedom.
Keep paying for them.
No, actually, free do because my grandfather's a pulmonologist and it eats me alive every night knowing that I smoke. Okay. Last game of the match week six, we have Brighton Crystal Palace. Martin, our gay seagulls, are they the new Leicester?
Dude, I no. Because you and I have been gay seagull fans since our fucking puppy dogs, our Huddersfield Terriers, went down to the championship and we were forced to pick a new team to root for. We've been on this Brighton train. Like we're essentially OG Brighton fans. Like whenever Brighton was founded, we were there. We signed that paper. So everybody else but us are sleeping on Brighton. Fucking love those gay seagulls.
Oh, I'm sorry. My cat was like biting at me, so I had to throw him out the door.
I heard weird like sounds. I didn't want to fucking ask what was going on.
Yeah, Theo, my beautiful ginger baby. He just turned 4 years old not too many months ago. Little dickhead was just been sleeping in my room all day, and then he wants to play as soon as daddy wants to work. But I will. Back to your point. Brighton has been our darlings for so long, and it's so good to see that, you know, it's coming to a head. And Maupé is literally the most perfect Brighton player because he has very much Troy Deeney energy, very hateable.
Dude, I was just about to say that. Fuck yeah, Kevin.
Exactly, like very Troy Deeney in your face. And I believe that's who Arsenal plays next is Brighton. So, and there is a history between us and Maupé. We'll see how that goes. We'll see. I could easily see us after coming off a big win after the North London Derby. We just totally dropped the fucking ball. But yeah.
That's usually how it goes for our clubs, bro.
Yeah.
That's loose to the rest.
But yeah. Zaha also still very good.
Yeah, man. I mean, shoot. He's the one that's, you know, keeping Crystal Palace in the Prem over the past couple seasons. I think that Wilf Zaha, he's 28 years old now. I mean, he's as old as me. I can't play soccer. But, I mean, I think that Wilf Zaha has deserved a move to a bigger club. But at this point, you might as well build a statue of him outside of the stadium and just make him a club legend because he is everything to that club. Between Jordan Ayew and Christian Benteke, there might be a total of 7 soccer brain cells between the two. But I just love Wilf Zaha, and I hope he sticks around.
Yeah, same. You know he'd be perfect for right now, Spurs. He'd be a very Spursy Truth. Player. Yeah.
Truth, he would.
Let's go Brighton. Let's go to our fan questions to wrap this up. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Sissy_Jupe says, what do you think of Tottenham? Shit. Ha, got him. That was the line that people say.
Done.
Thank you. Just not good, man. They just feel like a club on the brink of like real collapse. And I'm not talking like relegation or anything like that, but like the expectations that Tottenham fans and also other people have set for them the past couple years, I think is destined for really, really bad things. I'm so good of my words, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, I just feel as though they're not going to, even like when we were saying they're going to be in like 10th place this year, I could see it really dropping low this year based on just morale around the locker room.
Yeah, I think that what Kev said was perfect there. I mean, it depends as to what the expectations you have for this club. If you're a Tottenham fan, you obviously think that they're a top four contender season in, season out. In a good season, they might contend for the title itself. But, I mean, realistically, I think a top 10 finish this year would be good for Tottenham. I'm still sticking to my guns and saying that they're hanging around that 10th spot.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Griggs JC says, what would make MLS become the best non-top five league in the world or best in Americas? Well,
fucking promotion and relegation and actually competitive.
Yeah, well, I do think it's
and
very competitive.
Stop the draft. Stop Americanizing it. How about that? Here's the perfect answer. Stop Americanizing MOS and actually play football per terms of football rules.
Yeah, I just with how dominant American football is in America, I can never imagine the MLS topping that, because I feel like the NBA has come close and they've kind of fallen off a bit lately. Baseball is taking it back, NHL is taking it back, and American football is just such king here. We're just so obsessed with it. But I could see MLS passing, like, I could even see it passing baseball. I could see it pass. I think the big reason is the international reason, because we've become such a diverse, amazing country that I think the diversity would help make, you know, where those leagues, you know, baseball is more like, you know, they do have like the international, like South America and all the islands and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was going to say South America and like Japan and China and all that shit.
Yeah, but I mean, soccer just is way more king. You know what I mean?
I'm right there with you. But I think when it comes down to,
I can see it past hockey.
I don't, because I think hockey brings out a guttural emotion in humans. It's just such an amazing, crazy sport that so little people can do from, you know, 4 years old. Like, everybody can play soccer at 4 years old. That you'd be fucking
hard pressed.
Right, but
I think the accessibility, though, hockey's not that accessible.
Exactly. And I think that's why hockey is going to, you know, remain, you know, third, fourth place, just because it's inaccessible, but it's also so iconic where you're just like, holy shit, they're literally skating with knives on their feet. I thought the question was more geared to what can MLS do to become the best soccer in the North and Central and South American countries.
Yeah, that was the first question. You're right.
And I do not see that coming, because it's just not set up to promote competitiveness. There is no fear of being an absolute dog shit team. You can tank a season and get the best player coming out of college. And there's no risk for the owners. There's no risk for the clubs. And that dilutes the competitiveness in the league in itself. So I think Liga MX will always be a more competitive league. I think, you know, the Argentinian or the Brazilian league, while it's not nearly as popular, I think will always be a more competitive league. You will find more talent in there just because you're forced to. I'm not going to say that the MOS will become a feeder league to anybody. Other than, you know, a few marquee players a season, like we do see in transfer market and Fabrizio Roman, you get like three or four MLS players going to Europe a season. And meanwhile, you look in Argentina and you look in Brazil, and I mean, how many players go to Europe a season from them? It's a shitload more. So I don't see it changing until we have true competitiveness, and that I do not believe is achieved until we have real promotion and relegation.
True. I mean, I'm all for that, but money. No owner wants to see their team make less money if they get sent down.
Goddamn right.
All right. Matt Sia says, perfect replacement if Ollie gets sacked. So we're not arguing if Ollie gets sacked or not. Let's say he gets sacked tomorrow. Who would be your perfect replacement, Martin, as a Man United fan?
Nagelsmann or Ter Hag? The Ajax coach or the Red Bull Leipzig coach for People who don't know those names.
Oh, I like the Red Bull coach a lot. I mean, the Ajax coach is also a great pick as well, but the Red Bull coach would be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I think both of them play a new age kind of style of football. The likes that we do see in who's Bayern's new manager? Or not Bayern's new manager, Bayern's old manager, who's now the national coach's manager. I can't remember his fucking name. But it's that style of new age football that Hans Flick? I think would... Yeah. And I think that would do very well at Manchester United. And, you know, if you are playing at Ajax, you have a history of yourself and you know how to manage players who are destined for bigger things. I mean, Ajax is a brilliant feeder club. And then you go to Red Bull Leipzig. I think that they have overachieved for their station for the past couple of years. And yes, they are the Manchester City of Germany. But with that being said, they have done a great job of building from not so great opportunities. So, yeah, those would be my two picks. And
well, let's Martin.
Be honest, I kind of mentioned it. Fucking 3-4 years from now, Cristiano Ronaldo, baby. Like, I think he would be the perfect Zinedine Zidane style manager.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Antonio Conte. I think he'd be great.
No, he would not. No. I am not getting roped into that FIFA argument. Antonio Conte is a brilliant fucking coach, but Manchester United does not hire coaches for one season and fires them. And that's what
Antonio Conte is. That's not on him. He doesn't leave. He just gets fired.
And well, I mean, there has to be a problem with Antonio Conte for him to do that at Chelsea and at Inter. It's no, Antonio Conte is not the answer unless he wants short-term glory, and that's not
Conte. Martin, I will say, I just thought of this when you were mentioning Ajax. You know, the last Ajax coach, Ajax coach, to be Manchester United's manager didn't work out too well.
No, it did not. He was a great play actor falling over like he did, though.
Oh, Louis. I miss that man.
Those were dark days, bro.
Louis Van Gaal. Next question. How do we feel about Brighton and their chances of finishing top 10? So far, pretty good. But, you know, I feel as though 10 through 12 sounds right at this moment. I do like Brighton a lot. They are Gay Eagles. We've been, you know, number one stands of the goals since day one. And but, you know, I feel like over the course of the season, what did I say? We're 15% in. I think they'll go back to the average.
Yeah, I think 10 to 12 is a very good and very respectable bet for Brighton. I'm right there with you, Kev.
Okay. Last question from our Instagram. Make sure to follow our @ladspodcast. Pana Genetics says, time to fire Ollie.
Grow up.
Grow up. Such a mean insult. I love that insult. Grow up.
Favorite thing to say.
It really cuts deep. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's time to fire Ollie, but
No, it's not. We're in second place, you twerp.
Yeah, I feel as though there's, you know, you're still easily top four. I don't see a reason why. Okay. Last two questions from our Twitter @lads_podcast. James J. Rose says, what do you think of Tottenham? Arsenal fan answers only. Oh, so just for me, Martin. Wow, I'm special. I think I kind of gave my thoughts about Tottenham.
I haven't hit it, maybe.
Okay. I feel as though Spurs are in a really weird limbo right now where they want to, their identity is to be this massive club at the London Stadium and stuff like that, but they have their marquee player wanted out. Their manager was their 10th choice, and the owner is all over the place and just cares about money, but also he doesn't because he doesn't want to give away their marquee player. And I don't know. And all the players are good. You have a couple really good players, but nothing to, you know, sing home about. Like, I mean, Kane is probably one of the best players in the world. He's not playing like one right now. Son is definitely one of the best wingers in the league, and he's kind of holding this team together by a thread. Everyone else is like pretty good. So Tottenham in a real weird space right now. So if I'm a Tottenham fan, I'm just like, kind of just like, whatever. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And you're just kind of annoyed. And I don't know if this will end until Harry Kane is actually gone from the club, to be honest. Like, if I'm a Tottenham fan, I'm probably very happy Kane stayed. But if he keeps acting and playing like this, would it have been better to have just gotten that money and invested it into the next couple seasons and some new players, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go any further, but I wanted to go a follow-up off this question. Any similarities you see to the Pogba drama over the past couple years and the current Harry Kane drama?
No, because I feel as though, because Harry Kane, Pogba was overblown for a couple reasons, because the media just has such a vendetta against him, and you can point to it being like they just pick him because of his dancing, or other people have made the very bold claim that is due to racism. I'm not going to make those claims personally. I understand those, but what I do think is that, you know, Pogba never held out. He always showed up on time. He was always at training. He never specifically came out and said that he never came out and said like, oh, transfer me to this club or whatever.
No,
like,
he did not.
If anything, that was all his agent, but like Harry Kane specifically has come out and through his brother. So I think Pogba has been nothing but a professional, and is all the media hate towards him has really been unwarranted. I mean, when he doesn't show up on the field, I think that's warranted, but everything else like, is really just people just blowing things out of proportion. So, does that answer your question?
No, I think that's perfect. I think that's absolutely perfect, brother.
Spot on, lad. Spot on. Last question comes from the Footy Fellas Pod. They ask, how long until Graham Potter is plucked away by a bigger name club, if at all? I think he's perfect where he is. Let's not, you know, let him play out this season. Let's see where he finishes the season. I like Graham Potter. I think he's a very excellent coach. But let's just chill out. I'm sure he can probably step up a little bit, but let's see how he finishes it out with Brighton first. And like, let's enjoy this. Okay.
Yeah. I think what Kev said was perfect. And let me answer your question with a question. If Graham Potter deserves a bigger club move, what does Sean Dyche deserve?
Nothing.
Because the Sean man's Dyche kept Burnley in the fucking Prem for the past 5-7 years. Graham Potter is getting closer to the level of Sean Dyche. No, Graham Potter is doing great where he's at right now. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, guys. Grow up.
Let's relax. Grow up. I like Graham Potter. I also love all the Harry Potter memes that come out of him. So that's fun. But yeah, guys, that's our show. I'm going to be in New York this weekend, so this will probably be our pod for the week. Sorry, there probably won't be any predictions, but hey, we just gave you an hour and like 13 or odd minutes of free content. So please enjoy, break it up if you have to, if you have some long drives, and, you know, stay tuned for some more stuff on our social media. So yeah, we love you. We'll catch you later.
I'll be your dream. I'll be your wish. I'll be your fantasy.
I'll be your hope, I'll be your love, be everything that you need.
I love you more with every breath, truly, madly, deeply do. I will be strong, I will be faithful, cause I'm counting on a new beginning. A reason for living, a deeper meaning, yeah. I want to stand with you on a mountain. I want to be
the pleasure and the sun.